This is the part of the sermon where I usually tell a funny story, and it usually involves me getting into a fight at Walmart or something along those lines. A lot of funny things happened this week. I could tell you about how I took our kids to Saul's Discount Barber. That was kind of fun. All sorts of fun things that we did, but something kind of hit me this morning, and I need to share it. I've never been angrier with Jack in my entire life. Jack is our little three-year-old, if you don't know. We had a really, really long week of church stuff. And the conclusion of the week is that Lori was doing a wedding yesterday in Poway, which meant she went to the wedding rehearsal and played music on Friday. And then we went back to Poway in the morning yesterday to set up another keyboard, and then back home, and then back to Poway for the wedding itself, and then we went home from there. Our kids were beat, and Jack loses his brains at a certain point in the day, and our kids were just done. We did so much church stuff, they were cooked, and we made this kind of promise to them, we'll do something fun after we're done with all the wedding stuff. Well, it just so happened, I said, we'll go to dinner, and then we'll have some fun after that. Well, it just so happened that we decided to go to this one place off of Mira Mesa that we like. We're in line, and I look in front of me, and there's a priest friend of mine, Father Caleb Ben Shaza Hummel, for those of you who know. And I'd just been thinking about them, that they're going to be moving soon, and I was so excited to see them. We lost track of all time. I was, you know, just doing the priest schmoozing thing. We talked the whole time about all sorts of stuff, you know, all of our friends, all of our enemies, all that kind of stuff. And we spent all this time talking, and we ran out of time. Our kids lost it in the meantime. So they have two boys. We have two boys. It was like a wildlife zoo there at the restaurant, and they just were yelling and screaming by the end of it. We ran out of fun time for the boys. We said, we can't really do anything fun tonight. They were upset. Jack decided to respond by running around in this mall that we were at. It was an outdoor mall. It was safe. It was fine. And I realized it wasn't his fault he was like that. So I didn't want to yell at him. But so I was just kind of doing the jokey, like, father, like, you know, kind of running around and wrestling a little bit with him. So he was a little bit upset we weren't going to be doing something fun afterwards. He thought we were, like, bowling or something. But he was also thinking we were just having fun right now, too. So he was kind of in a goofy mood. And so I put him in his car seat, and he realized now we aren't doing anything fun. We're going home, and it looks like it's almost bedtime, judging by the position of the sun in the sky. And so it was at that point that we discovered that Jack knows how to get out of his car seat by himself, and that Jack knows how to press the button on the space van in order to open the door. And that's when Jack ran out of our car, giving Mom and Dad a heart attack as he ran through, like, the busiest parking lot we've ever been in. And it was absolutely terrifying. And I caught him 5 feet later. It wasn't, you know, there was really never in any danger, but it was the kind of thing that keeps parents up at night. It was absolutely terrifying. Jack is the kind of kid who keeps parents up at night. And we just stayed up late last night, just, you know, binge watching TV and feeling sorry for ourselves. And then at 6 in the morning, they were back at it. They were both awake again. Both awake, playing Legos, requesting my help to find a Lego piece that I knew was in the bottom of the enormous Lego bin. And I wanted to cry. I was so tired. I was so done. And I just said, guys, I can't. I don't have anything left. And I had the thought when I got back in bed this morning after telling them that what if they recognize I don't have the energy to do the dadding that I want to do because I'm too busy doing the churching that I'm being called to do. What if that equation balances in favor of them leaving church life? Now, don't get me wrong. We also had a great moment this week when Sam put on one of my white shirts and a scarf and did communion for us. So there's a nice balance. But it was an absolutely terrifying thought that what if this church thing got in the way of this dad thing to the degree that our kids say it's too hard. We don't want to do this anymore. And I got to thinking about all of these people. There are a few big names in church life these days within Christianity that are going apostate. That big church word that means just leaving the church, leaving the faith altogether. And usually they come with pretty large Facebook posts or tweets that explain just why they're leaving. And at the root of each one of these, I remember two that I'm reading from this week that were heartbreaking to read. At the root of both of them are this idea that it's just too hard. This faith thing, this Jesus thing, is just too hard. I thought when I signed up for this, there would be some sort of life enhancement. And the reality is, the world is hard. But the world plus following Jesus is even harder. This isn't making my life any easier. This isn't me living my best life now. And quite frankly, it's too hard. So if I'm going to have to shed something, it's going to be my faith. It's too hard, and I'm done. And as a dad, as a priest, that's absolutely terrifying to hear. And nothing's new. Isn't this what Jesus is warning them against today? He's got this big crowd of followers. And quite frankly, it's because he serves bread. He gives them fish. They might have heard that he has the ability to turn water into wine. That gets a following. And if I'm Jesus' PR guy, I'm saying, good job, keep this up. But don't say what I think you're about to say. Because he turns around with this big crowd, fish guy, bread guy, I'm so excited, he heals people all the time, you know, the blind or seeing, the lame or walking. Let's follow this guy. Plus, he seems to be saying things against the authority that we don't like. And he turns around to them and he says, hey, you guys got to count the cost here. I got to be first. He uses such strong language here, doesn't he? If you don't hate your family, the people that you love, comparatively, then you can't be my disciple. If you don't hate your family, your mother, your father, your kids, your wife, if you don't hate them in comparison with the amount that you love me, you can't be my disciple. I gotta be first. I have to be first. And count the cost of what I'm asking. Again, if I'm Jesus' PR guy, I'm saying, what about the bread? What about the wine? What about all of these nice things that you can provide? Let's talk more about that. But Jesus is being really honest here, isn't he? This world is hard. This world plus following Jesus is even harder. So count the cost of what I'm asking. And he talks about a guy who's doing a building project. You know, don't go halfway and have to stop. It's humiliating. Don't go to war against a neighboring country if you haven't thought about how your soldiers can fight. That causes death. That's humbling. You know, don't have a 40-year renewal vow service if you can't afford the cake. You know, you don't want the cake to say congratulations because you can't afford the rest of it.
No cake.
Is this how I'm hearing? There's no cake. Come on. No. But count the cost. What he's really asking is death, isn't it? What's the word that he uses? What's the last word that we hear from him? Gives up everything. We have to give up everything. Make him first and be ready to give up everything. I love the story. Thanks for reading that, Michelle. I love that story. There's a lot of weird names. But this epistle that Paul writes to his friend Philemon, it's one of my favorite little nuggets of scripture. Philemon was a wealthy man in Ephesus. He owns a huge estate, many slaves. It's not uncommon in that time for a slave to try to run away. And a slave named Onesimus, whose name, by the way, means useful, Onesimus runs away. Onesimus goes to Rome, where many, many runaway slaves would go because it's a big city, and they could get lost in the mix. Nobody asks questions in a big city. Now, it just so happens that one of Philemon's friends, Paul, is in prison in Rome. And Paul is in prison for sharing Jesus. He counted the cost, and he becomes a disciple to the point where it costs him his life. And now he's in prison awaiting his death. And Onesimus knows this, Paul, and something in him tells him, go and see. Go and see. And he visits Paul in prison. And during those encounters, as Paul is talking to Onesimus the useful, Onesimus encounters Jesus. He hears the gospel. He's transformed by it. He's a new man. He's taken off his old life. He's put his life to death and taken up new life by following Jesus even to the point of the cross. And Onesimus is a new man. In Christ, there is no Gentile or Jew, slave or free. He is a new man. Onesimus is born again. And then Paul says this that I think would be just the hardest thing for him to hear. He says, now, you got to go home. You ran away. And yes, you were under bondage, but you got to go home. You have to go back to Philemon. Can you imagine what that would feel like to hear? You have to go back to be a slave again. Because following Jesus means that you have to be living a life right in Jesus. Remember, this is the same Jesus who tells us that if we're struck on the cheek, we offer the other one. Or if we have to walk for a soldier, we walk another mile. This is the same Jesus who put the cross on his back and was crucified for the whole world. And so Paul says, Onesimus, you have to go home. And Paul writes this letter on Onesimus' behalf and gives it to him and says, give this to your master Philemon. Take this with you as you go. And it's a great letter, isn't it? It's a letter of recommendation where he tells the person, I don't even want to remind you that you owe me your soul. Cool would that be to write, right? He says, treat him as a brother. Bring him home. And I have to imagine that the faith of this young Onesimus is tested with every step, with every mile that he goes. Because you're out. You're walking around. You could go in any direction, but you are headed back to bondage. You can make the choice. And I have a feeling that Onesimus the Useful is tempted at every single turn to just turn around. And it strikes me that didn't happen. We don't know much about him after this. But the very thought that we have the letter is a pretty good indicator that it reached its destination. Onesimus counts the cost, makes that decision that this world is hard, with Jesus it's harder, but the blessing is even greater. Remember our Old Testament reading. Oh, that you would choose life. And following Jesus means putting to death everything in this world. But it also means life eternal. Know that Jesus doesn't promise life enhancement. But what he does promise is that he walks every step of the way. He walks with us. He walked back with Onesimus to Philemon's house with letter in hand. He walks with us. He carries with us with him, even as he carries the cross on his back. Now, a little tiny anecdote. We don't really hear much more about what happens in this event in Onesimus' life. But here's what we do know. When the letters of Paul are first gathered together as a collection of epistles, sort of a proto-New Testament, it's done a couple of decades later, a couple of decades after Paul has died, in the city of Ephesus. And it's all done and compiled under a bishop named Onesimus. How cool is that, right? That means that this man had the courage to walk with Jesus, even if that pathway meant slavery, even if it meant dying to self, even if it meant giving up everything to follow Jesus. He counted the cost, and he walked back home, and he delivered that letter. And he was received as a brother. And he followed Jesus to become a bishop of the church. He followed Jesus even as he aged. And he matured in his faith. He followed Jesus, counting the cost of following him. So what does it cost? Absolutely everything. Does he promise the road's going to get easier? No. In fact, it often gets much harder. But this is what he promises. He promises that he will never leave or forsake us. He will never let us walk alone. He will hold us up by his righteous right hand, and such as it is for the children of God. Count the cost. It's everything. That we would be called the children of God. That we would be restored and brought into the most blessed kingdom. That we would be called up to sit on our dad's lap on the throne for all of eternity, to rule as co-heirs. So is the cost really that high? Some days it feels like it. Count the cost. But know that you are called children of God. Know that you are his. Know that he's counted it first. And know that he will never leave you or forsake you.